WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the Big Picture. It's Eric, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636. 855-915-WMFO. That is the telephone number. Write those numbers down. Punch them into your phone. Call us up. We love to hear from our listeners. Later tonight, what's going on with something? Oh, immigration in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I had to think about it because things have been breaking on that story today.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
It's getting interesting. So we're going to be taking a look at what the Supreme Judicial Court decided and how the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is reacting to that and what the fate may be of compliance with federal law here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. 855-915-9636. Lisa Nichols, hello.
Hi.
There's no Shea Spillane on assignment
it's
tonight.
It's back to how it used to be, just you and I.
Just you and I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You feel the vibes going?
No, I feel angry.
Is it the heat? Is the heat getting to you again?
What heat? There's no heat.
It's warm.
No, it's not. It's beautiful nice. Outside. No, it's gorgeous
that's the thing.
Weather.
It's warm and beautiful. It's not humid and sticky like it was last week.
Everything makes me angry. That's really what it comes
down
to.
That is true.
Everything makes me angry.
I know.
I keep looking for a reason to not be angry, and I keep just...
You're still smiling at this point. See, you have to understand with, just you and I doing the show back together again, we don't have somebody to break up our fights. If anybody was listening last week, we started to grapple a little bit near the end.
Well, I believe you were saying...
Stay tuned, who knows?
I believe you were saying dumb things at the time, so...
Oh, is that what they were? You know, those well-thought-out, intelligent statements that were based off of a lot of fact and some opinion in there, but no, you
rich in truthiness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Is that my crazy millennial mindset just taking over?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Millennials are wrong.
But again, you keep me around.
Let me just start with that. Millennials are wrong. anyway, let's move on from that and find out what is happening in our world right now.
Well, today in local news, we learned healthcare is hitting local level also as well. Lawmakers again rebuffed Governor Charlie Baker's efforts to tie a $200 million health care assessment on Massachusetts employers to change in the state's Medicaid program. The Democratic-controlled House voted 116-41 Wednesday to reject the Republican governor's proposed amendment to the state's $40 billion budget. The vote came one day after legislative hearings were held on Baker's Medicaid package, which, among other things, would move an estimated 140,000 non-disabled people off of MassHelp and into subsidized insurance provided through the state's health care connector. Critics say that it would mean higher costs and reduced benefits for many low-income families. The vote makes it likely that businesses will pay a new fee, which Baker has argued should be linked with cost-saving Medicaid reforms. Democrats aren't ruling out later action on the proposals. So once again, I'm sure everybody's been hearing, if you are on social media, if you were actually paying attention to mainstream media, healthcare is a hot button issue, not only on the federal level we are talking about here in the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts
Yeah, because we can't afford it.
Somewhat of a unique entity, would you say? Massachusetts was on the forefront of pushing a state-run healthcare.
Well, we had Obamacare before it was cool.
And it was by a different name, essentially.
Yeah.
But the thing with Romney Care or MassHealth or however you wanted to call it was actually somewhat affordable. It did put you into different brackets and where you stood financially, but you were able to get healthcare. I mean, how many people were insured in the state of Massachusetts? A very high percentage and a low percentage were paying the... I'm not going to use you because you fall into the category of...
I dodged it.
I
paid the fee every year. Mm-hmm. I dodged it for years. Look, I come back to the same central problem. We don't have an issue with whether or not health care is affordable.
Well,
we have an issue with health care costs, okay? And as long as private insurance is involved, health care is going to cost too much and deliver too little in this country. Period. End of story.
Mm-hmm. No, of course.
We need a single-payer system. Single-payer Medicare for all. The problem with that, and this is one of those cases that illustrates that is the particular group of people that Governor Charlie Baker is talking about are people who have long-term indeterminate medical needs. We're talking about disabled people who are very expensive to care for. They consume a large percentage of the Medicare budget.
Of course.
The elderly do too, but tends to be, you know how long that's going to last. We're talking about 18, 19, 14, 12, 11, 5-year-old disabled people who are going to be requiring expensive care for the next 70 years, perhaps. And that presents a very real problem when you combine that with an aging population that is increasingly relying on Medicare.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, how many times have we talked about that on this show in saying how when I get to that age, I am not going to have any money for Medicare?
No.
I mean, forget about
it. No, because
the
boomers are going to spend it all.
You know, just our state as an example, we do not have money. How many times are we constantly stating what the budget deficit is here in Massachusetts? Where is the money going? Where is the money going? I don't understand it.
Healthcare, that's where it's going. An increasing percentage of the budget every single year goes to healthcare and pensions.
No, of course, and but it's a completely broken system, as
yes.
you just stated. When you have insurance company. Just a simple example of going to CVS to go pick up a prescription, and the four people in line in front of me, one person, and I'm going to say majority are elderly, one person is picking up a shopping cart worth of medicine.
And that's a heart patient.
But regardless of what the conditions are, it's insane what is automatically prescribed by doctors. Not only that, it's the prices that are, and of course it's not, there was somebody in front of me that got angry at the pharmacy for charging so much. It's not the pharmacy, it's the insurance company. The insurance company decides what to charge. And again, it's not the doctors.
It's neither of the above. It's the pharmaceutical companies that are allowed to charge ridiculous rates for medicine.
But what it comes down to, though, for the majority is insurance companies. Insurance companies are deciding the factors on what is going to cost and how much this is going to cost, how much they're going to be giving the doctors, giving the hospitals.
Which is why.
And it's a constant battle between the two.
Which is why everybody overprices everything so that they can get by on the minimum that the insurance company will pay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This system is unsustainable. And the longer that we sit here and try and pretend we can make it work, the more time we just waste and the worse it gets for everybody. We need a single payer healthcare system. Because then the government sits down and says, okay, this is what this is going
to
cost.
Okay, now what would you say to the opponents of a single payer healthcare and saying that would never work in this country?
Give me a reason why it would never work in this country.
I'm giving you questions would come up.
You know who those opponents are?
I'm not saying this is my opinion, but what you hear a lot of times is, what about people that need more care than just seeing a doctor once a year for a physical or so on, the waiting list, and so on?
If everybody in the country is paying into the system, you can make it work. At a certain point, do you have to put limits on the care that people can receive? Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
And every country in the world that has a single-payer system has put those measures in place.
But especially, though, here, and this is where I start getting hesitant, because here in the United States, there is such a stronghold from the federal level on health care and their connection. Because essentially what we have is the insurance companies have a seat in Senate.
Yeah.
They have a seat in every single building in Washington. Not only that,
they
their
write
hands
the legislation.
Are in the pockets.
They write the legislation. Mm-hmm. And they write legislation that is beneficial to the insurance industry. As long as there is a profit motive. And that's what they're all about. Insurance companies are not providing health insurance because they're kind people. They're not providing health insurance because they want everybody to have long, healthy lives. They're in it for the money. That's all they care about.
Is that what it is?
Is the money.
Yeah.
Health insurance is a good racket.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good business to be in because they're making a lot of money. And as we watch our infrastructure crumble, as we watch more and more people go without health care, as we watch costs skyrocket, these guys are pulling in record profits every single year.
And when you say everybody's paying into the system, where is the money coming from? Is it automatically coming from your check?
Payroll deductions. You would spend less. Everybody in this country would spend less. You would save between 30 and 70% on what you're paying now if we had a single-payer health care system. 30 to 70%.
It's crazy, though.
Off of your current insurance costs. Mm-hmm. If you've got private...
But again, and that's why I say it makes me nervous, because understanding the state of not only, again, at the federal level, but here in Massachusetts, there is the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance agents, insurance companies, they decide everything. So when you have this single-payer health care, but you have all of those hands in the pockets of, you know, your elected leaders... How does it happen?
Because
is it possible?
Because it forces everybody to negotiate with the federal government on cost. It forces every hospital.
Yeah, but they're not negotiating. As you just said, they're writing the legislation themselves.
No, the insurance industry is. If we have a single payer healthcare system, the federal government is going to sit down and they are going to say, this is what we're going to pay. And hospitals, you're either going to live with this or you're going to go out of business, because this is what you're going to get. This
now,
is what
about,
heart surgery costs.
What about the
argument? This is what x-rays cost. This is what a broken bone costs. This is what everything costs.
What about the argument of quality of health care will go down?
No. I don't see...
But I mean, what you're telling me is if you have the government writing down... Because right now we live in a society where it is so inflated... What the perception cost of a specific surgery is or a specific procedure is, that we all of a sudden get to a point where we can come down from that, where the federal government writes this big old list of what everything costs. It's almost impossible to say the level of care will not go down.
Why? Are the doctors suddenly going to get worse? Are the doctors going to do a half-assed job because they're not getting as much money?
No, because
they're doctors.
But
no.
You have so many... You know, different industries. You have medical devices. You have that with the inflation, just like the inflation here in, you know, on the federal level, when inflation rates go up,
first of all,
rise and so on.
The quality of health care in this country isn't that good to begin with. And if you don't believe me, go ask someone who has to go to a VA hospital. And see what's
Derek,
going on over there.
You can't even bring in the VA hospital into that. Is a whole separate
mess. This is all the same issue. This is all the same issue.
But I mean, if you really want to get into that, that's insane that, you know, people risk their lives every day for this country and get treated the way that some of our veterans do at VA hospitals. It's sickening. It's sickening, and any of our listeners, I want you to speak to somebody that has had to deal with this and the parameters that they make you go around.
But I'm just saying, you can get bad health care in this country right now. In fact, it's the default. Bad health care is the default in this country. That's what you get.
Well, what it comes down to is if you have money, then you don't have bad health care.
If you have money and you have an advocate, you can get good health care because you can go anywhere you want in the country to get treatment. You can harass people until you get the treatment that you're supposed to get, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, for the 1%, everything's working out great. For everybody else, the question whether health care in this country is going to get worse, my response to that would be, how much worse could it possibly get? Because it's pretty freaking bad right now. There's too much bureaucracy. There's too much nonsense. There are too many shenanigans going on between providers and the insurance industry. Clear all of that out. Get rid of all of it. No more pricing games so that we can try and anticipate what the insurance company is going to pay us.
Well, the question is, how high is it going to get if nothing ever changes?
Actual quality standards enforced in the same way that the Social Security Administration does it now, which is if you don't provide a certain quality of care, you lose your Social Security reimbursements, which has done more to improve the quality of care in our hospitals than anything any insurance company has ever done. Go ask a Canadian how they feel about their health care.
But, I mean, if you talk to any doctor...
Go ask someone in the United Kingdom. Go ask somebody in Switzerland. Go ask somebody in Cuba. One of the poorest countries on the planet has one of the best health care systems on the planet.
No, and from a doctor's standpoint, if you talk to any of them, and we'll get more into Obamacare, but they're pretty much, you know, a written, priced out surgery. They're getting maybe 2% of it.
Yeah.
the cost. So for anybody that thinks that doctors are making out in this, they're absolutely not. No.
That's why you can't find a lot of... Used to be you walked into a hospital and all the doctors were fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now the people who are at the top of their class in medical school go into research. They go to work for pharmaceutical companies because they can make money there. You can't make money in a hospital. You can't make money in private practice. And you spend most of your time dealing with bureaucracy and paperwork and headaches that have nothing to do with treating patients.
Sad state.
It's unsustainable.
Mm-hmm. And it's only getting worse.
And we need to stop putting Band-Aids on it, take it out back, put two in the back of the head, and bring something new in here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to solve this.
We need some new legs.
On a similar note, Vice President Mike Pence cast the deciding vote, breaking a 50-50 tie in the Senate yesterday to allow debate to move forward on plans to repeal Obamacare. Senator John McCain, diagnosed last week with aggressive brain cancer, returned to the Senate from Arizona to a standing ovation and voted in favor of debate, along with Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who previously opposed the measure. Republicans do not currently have enough votes to pass a House bill that President Donald Trump called, quote, mean, end quote. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell believes an amended version could be ready for a vote by the end of the week, or that the Senate may approve a so-called skinny repeal of Obamacare, which would eliminate the individual mandate, the employer mandate penalty, and the medical device tax introduced by the Affordable Care Act. Vote number one actually took place just a few moments ago, which would have been a straight repeal of Obamacare, no replacement. 55-45, it was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans do not have the votes to just flat out repeal, which was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was ever in the cards. The question now becomes whether or not they can get this so-called skinny bill through, which gets rid of the tax penalties.
Does it sound more appealing when it's skinny?
Not in America.
Now, you know, compelling everyone to be a part of the health insurance market makes healthcare cheaper for everyone, understandably. But is it true that, in fact, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that people who buy insurance will see their premiums go up? I think it was somewhere around 20-25%.
Yeah.
Are we going to do that? I mean, not only are we talking about premiums going up, but repealing just a mandate and nothing else will leave... We've heard some numbers between 10 and 15 million people without insurance.
Well, because they're not going to be able to afford it, because it's not... But that's... The individual mandate isn't what was going to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
The employer mandate is part of what was going to make this work. And the tax on medical device manufacturers was just somebody grabbing for some cash because it happened to be in the vicinity. The employer mandate penalty is probably the one thing they should leave in place, because if you tell employers, yeah, you can break the law, we know that there are employers who will break the law unless there are financial consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, there are employers who will break the law.
I'm only using myself as an example, and I've heard a few people in my industry talking about it where their employers have made it extremely difficult to be insured through them. Whereas before, it was money taking out of your check. Unfortunately, being in the hospitality industry, a majority of people are tipped employees, so that it ends up coming out of your taxes. January 1st, 2016, I believe it was, Massachusetts, changed the law where that can't happen anymore, so you actually have to pay your healthcare insurers. But now, because it is becoming so much more expensive for employers, they're making it more difficult or dropping their insurance. And we've talked about this before, where it is required by the employers to offer insurance up to, I believe it's 25 full-time employees. Now they're dropping people down to part-time,
right,
so that they don't have to do it.
So they don't have to do it.
Or dropping it, because what? Before, part-time was 20, 25 hours. Now it's 30 hours?
Because it is insanely expensive
for
companies to provide health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it is. Even if they're only paying 20%, it's insanely expensive, and they don't want to incur that cost if they don't have to. So
do you agree or disagree with that? Because I believe before on the show, one time you had said, well, the companies are going to have to just pay for it. Where I had argued that it would become far too difficult with the mandate that was trying to be pushed through, that it would become far too difficult for these smaller companies. And I'm not talking about, you know, your mom and pop shop that employs 20 people total. I'm talking about these kind of middle, not your big corporations, but...
This is why I say you need the employer mandate, mm-hmm. because these companies do have to suck it up and pay it. But if you take the employer mandate penalty away, they're not going to. Mm-hmm. They're just going to, the day after that passes, they're all going to be like, yep, we got rid of the health insurance policy. Go get your own insurance.
No, and that's the thing. You can't.
If you want to see what's going
on, you can't pick
ahead.
And choose because you feel bad for the middleman company that's trying to, you know, stay afloat because they have a couple locations,
yeah.
you know, in Massachusetts. Compared to like the mom and pop shop or, you know, the bit larger corporations that employ a couple hundred people. So, yes, no, you can pick and choose. But when it's tough because when employers are making it so difficult, but on the other end, I understand where it is hard if you're starting out a business to be able to pay that.
You know how you could get rid of all of those costs for employers?
Oh, single payer
and make it simple for employers to give insurance to everybody? Single payer health care.
Mm-hmm.
No cost to employers other than their regular, you know, administrative benefit costs, which now, you got an HR department, you withhold taxes, you send them to the government. That's all you got to do. Done. Over.
Now, what about the conversation you and I had, you know, probably back almost a year ago, in saying that with these large insurance companies, they are in different regions of the country. Because here in Massachusetts, we're lucky. We have a lot of insurance companies, a lot of options that you can choose. If you look at other parts of the country, not so lucky. You're dealing with maybe one, two, or three.
Right.
Look at Mississippi, Alabama, perfect example of
There's a formula to this. The poorer your state is, the fewer insurance options that you have.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wealthy state. So we have a lot of options.
Now, if we get to a point across the country where you are having, because this is what's happening in these poorer states, your smaller insurance companies are getting swallowed alive by the larger corporations. If you get to a point, and we had discussed this in saying, ultimately, if you had two large insurance companies, essentially, they merge like we're seeing in so many industries, leaving one large entity. Which you can make any price you want for any of these things. That is not allowed here in the United States, unfortunately. That is called monopoly.
That's the point where this federal government can probably step in.
The federal government can take over.
Take the company over and say, okay, this is our new insurance. This is our new health benefits.
So do we allow that to happen?
I think the solution that I'm leaning toward now, and let me preface this by saying, Donald Trump screwed up. Donald Trump screwed up big time. When he campaigned on the idea that he was going to get rid of Obamacare and put something new in place. Because a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that Obamacare was something that happened between 2008 and 2010. This is not true. Hillary Clinton spent 3 years, from 1992 to 1995, working on a health care proposal that did not pass Congress in the United States. The bones of that proposal then found their way up to Massachusetts between 2000 and 2000, or between 1996 and 2008, where it became Romney Care. That then went back down to Washington after Barack Obama got elected and became Obamacare in 2010. So there was actually, if you do all of
so
the math
another
on
thing
it,
to blame Hillary Clinton for.
There was an 18-year journey toward getting this very impractical, poorly thought out, unworkable healthcare reform passed.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is not going to...
It wasn't a healthcare reform. It was a law.
Donald Trump...
It was
put a gun to your head. You buy insurance or you mm-hmm. pay. That's what it was. 18 years it took just to get that bad idea passed and workable. Donald Trump thinks he's going to do it in, what, 4 months? No, you're not.
It's impossible to.
Unless you are going to have the federal government, and this is the solution that I'm leaning toward right now. You have the federal government take over the insurance companies in the United States of America. All of their employees automatically go on the federal payroll. You get rid of all the executives, gone. bye-bye. You get rid of all the shares. So you're just taking the fair market value you pay for these insurance companies. Federal government inherits all of the existing policies, all of the existing balances of the insurance companies. Those employees become administrators for a single-payer healthcare system that you phase into place over the course of 4 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is one way that you could do it. It would be unprecedented in United States history. We do not like the idea of the government coming in and taking over private companies.
Mm.
We don't do that here.
Doesn't that start getting into some murky waters?
I think things have gotten so out of control with health insurance and healthcare costs in this country that we're getting to a point where it will be the only choice.
No, exactly. Like you just said, it took 18 years to build this up, and it progressively is getting worse and worse. And it was building, you know, debris all around it through these 18 years, and it was, you know, premiums got higher, more people became uninsured, prices gone up, medicine, and so on and so on. It's unrealistic to believe that, yes, in 4 months, you're going to completely unravel the system without some dramatic change. And that's a question I think that they have to ask in Washington, is there any other way? Because essentially what's going on in the atmosphere right now in Washington is this back and forth. I'm not going to pass it. We're going to pass it. Yeah. Not going to pass it. We're going to pass it. Not going to pass it. It's exhausting.
Unless you walked into office with a proven plan that you knew would work. And it was simply a question of getting the votes
for it.
That's
the thing. I throw up my hands so many times and say, what could we possibly do?
What's the plan? That's the question we need to be asking Donald Trump.
There is no plan.
What's the plan? How do you fix it? Oh, we're going to have a great plan. What's the plan? There is no plan. There's no plan.
But there never was a plan. The plan was, and unfortunately, Trump thought that, you know, you can just go into something or look at it, you know, press the magic wand, wave it around, and it changes. Things don't happen like
that in real estate.
In real life.
In real estate, it does. If you're a developer, that's what you do.
No, because you have a pen and you sign, the dotted line. You get a bulldozer, yes, and the building's gone. Or you make deals happen.
And you put up a new building and it makes more money.
Of course.
And everybody's happy. You can't do that with health insurance. It doesn't work that way.
Well, when you're talking about billions of people that are depending on it and lives that are being affected every single day.
We're not up to billions. We're millions of people.
Yes, but close. You're dealing with that. It's not.
There is a rising groundswell of support for single-payer health care in this country that did not exist at the time that Obamacare was passed. And did not exist, and it began to exist as insurance companies started pulling out of the exchanges, as options started to dwindle, as costs started to go up. People started to realize that single payer is a better idea. It is a better way to go. And I can't help but wonder if there isn't some belief down in Washington that if we just keep kicking the can down the road on this thing, sooner or later the American people will demand that we take over the insurance industry and create a single payer system, and then nobody has to get blood on their hands politically. But right now it's what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
That's the plan. Okay, if Congress wants a plan to fix health care in America, the United States government takes over the private insurance companies. You standardize everything across those companies. Keep the current benefits administrators in place. Get rid of the high-priced executives. Get rid of the Wall Street shenanigans. You take over the companies. You standardize the services. You standardize the plans. And over a period of 4 to 8 years, you merge them all into one new government system that handles health care costs for all Americans. If you work, you pay into it.
But the question is, if you don't work, then what happens?
If you don't work, hopefully there are enough other people working and paying into it.
But how can you say that?
I mean, the same there's way. So many everybody,
people.
Look,
we talk
everybody,
on this show about people being unemployed.
Everybody gets Social Security in this country. Everybody gets Social Security in this country.
Mm-hmm.
What you get out of Social Security depends on what you paid into it.
Of course.
But everybody gets something. because it is better to have our retirement age Americans getting a modest amount of money every month so they can live in an apartment somewhere than having them in the street begging for food, which is the alternative. We don't
have
that in this country.
But I can understand the argument of somebody saying, well, it's just like now in Massachusetts where I'm paying so much money into our state and my health care costs are astronomical, where people that come in that are not employed, are not legal citizens of this state, are getting free health care because they got pregnant in Massachusetts. So that same argument can be fitted against anybody in the country and saying, I am putting my hard-earned money in the hands of the federal government to pay for this new single health care. But what about the person or hundreds of thousands of people that do not work and are not paying into it?
If people aren't working because they don't have, because...
How many times do we say in this country, how is that fair?
It's part of the contract that we sign as a society.
And there's the imaginary contract? And
no, there is a certain, no, just by virtue of being an American, you have taken an oath to uphold your fellow Americans. By virtue of being a citizen of this country, you agree that you're going to uphold your fellow Americans because the alternatives are horrifying. And there is a certain percentage that you can afford. You know, if we're talking about 5, 6, 7% of people are getting benefits from the system without paying enough in, we can handle that.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's completely different. Somebody that is, you know, fell into crisis and is now become homeless and lost a job for a short period of time, that is far different with my example of somebody that is leaking the benefits,
by the way,
of being here illegally.
We're paying for those people now.
Of course we are.
That's part of the reason.
Every single day.
It's part of the reason healthcare costs so much in this country is because hospitals are required to treat anybody who walks through the door.
Of course. And you know what? They get $0.
And in some parts of the country, you have a lot more of that going on than in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So healthcare costs become uneven.
Look at Florida. Perfect example. I knew a doctor that performed many surgeries in Florida. For multiple surgeries would get $0.
Yeah.
But you know who does get the money? Pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies. They get all the money from the federal government.
So if you spread out the cost across everybody in America, everybody who's working, then you balance that out. And now we have a way to pay for people who are coming in looking for care because everybody has insurance. This will work. And if people want to go out and buy Cadillac plans so they can go, you know, stay at some fancy, you know, $5,000, $10,000 a night hospital room.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will say this. You're not going to get, if you're on the single-payer healthcare system, you're not going to get the private room.
No, of course.
Chauffeur and golf carts to drive you around the hospital and all the rest of this. You're going to get the same care everybody else does.
No, and I do not want to make it seem like I am completely against somebody that does not work in getting it. Unfortunately, now with the state of our country where unemployment rates are so high, I feel like that is almost impossible. If we can get unemployment rates down, then what you're saying will make so much more sense to me and will actually be viable in this country.
Part of the reason unemployment rates are high in good-paying, long-term jobs is because companies don't want to hire people and incur health care costs for them.
Exactly what I said a couple years ago.
It all comes back to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We
slippery
can,
slope, and it's
we
cycle.
Can solve a mountain of these problems at once
mm-hmm.
with a single-payer health care system. Anybody who is talking about anything else is wasting time. And you have to ask the question, are you wasting time because you honestly think there's a better way of doing this? Or are you wasting time so the American people will see the current system fall into complete shambles and demand that the federal government step in and do something? I think it's a fair question to ask at this point. Of whether or not these politicians are just sitting there saying, make it look like we're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Kick the can down the road. Sooner or later, the whole thing's going to fall apart and we'll have no choice but to step in. And then we can do the right thing then. But we need political cover now. Because the insurance industry throws so many billions of dollars at Congress that no one is going to step up to them. If you want a solution to that, by the way, everybody who's in the House of Representatives right now, kick them out. Throw them out mm-hmm. next November.
That's ideal.
Clean slate. And you'll be amazed at how much stuff you could get done in this country.
Derek Gary, 2018.
Not me. In world news, the future of cars may have to be electric. Britain unveiled a plan today to ban the sale of diesel and gas-powered cars and trucks after 2040, mirroring a plan announced in France by President Emmanuel Macron. The move comes in response to rising concerns about high concentrations of nitrogen oxide in the air in parts of Britain, which national health officials claim causes up to 40,000 premature deaths each year and 2.7 billion pounds in lost productivity. Pounds being their currency, not their weight. So this is
interesting.
The second major European country to come out and say no more gas-powered cars, mm-hmm. no more gas-powered vans. They're still going to allow gas-powered trucks. So if you have to haul things or plow things or that's okay.
This is the second country?
Yeah, because France has already said 2040.
Okay, France, and then we are starting to hear companies saying, Volkswagen said that they are going to completely, was it Volkswagen or Volvo?
Volvo said they are going to stop production of gas cars in 2020. We'll see if that actually happens. That's a big open question. A lot of this really kind of, for the auto industry, a lot of this hinges on what happens with Tesla and the new Tesla Model A, which is supposed to be the affordable Tesla. If those things start flying off the assembly line the way that a lot of market researchers believe they will, and they turn out to be good cars and people love them, then the U.S. auto industry is going to be heavily motivated to shift away from gas and diesel powered vehicles to electric powered vehicles. It will take them 6 years realistically to catch up. So if we get the good Tesla numbers 2018, 2019, by 2025, you could be looking at electric car production in the United States. Europe, and Volvo is primarily selling in the European market. Europeans have a very different relationship with their cars than Americans do. Americans drive their cars 100 miles a day. You know, it's, I live 50 miles from the office. Mm-hmm. I drive back and forth. Or you get in the car on the weekend, you drive three states away to go to a mountain somewhere. Europeans don't do that. Europeans use cars to get, you know, from the office to home, which is maybe 10 miles at most, or they use it to drive around the village. If they're actually going to go somewhere, they get on a plane or they get on a train. That's how you do long-distance travel in Europe. Even if you're out in the country, you may drive 100 miles a day to pick up things that you need, mm-hmm. to go into town and come back, something like that. But they don't drive the way that we do. So Europe has, for a long time, favored small, high-efficiency automobiles.
Of course. I don't know why I questioned France not being the first one, because they were the one on the forefront of the Paris Climate Accord, and every other country in the European Union was part of it. The United States, we were like,
but it's interesting.
Oops, we're going to skip it.
It's interesting what the United Kingdom is doing, or what I should say, Britain, because this is not, it's not one of the same here. This is not the United Kingdom. This is Britain. Mm-hmm. Britain is taking a very different approach here, because Britain is not making a climate argument with this. They're not saying this is about carbon emissions. They're not saying this is about global warming or climate change or any of those things. They're saying we have a serious health problem, and it's known. It's been documented. It's been studied. If you were in Manchester, if you were in Sheffield, if you, particularly if you're anywhere near downtown London, the levels of nitrogen oxide in the air are dangerous. Mm-hmm. And if you're breathing that stuff every day, you are shortening your lifespan.
Now, when in fact there had been some studies, and of course from both sides, and I'm not a climate change denier, but there have been multiple studies in saying that with the emissions requirements that the European Union is trying to push forth, specifically in the Paris Accord, that significantly it wouldn't make that much of a difference.
No, it wouldn't. But that's.
But I think, you know, the timescale involved here on a long term You know, scale is significant because we're talking about if this is enacted and other countries in the European Union follow suit, more countries in the world follow suit, that it is going to send a message to not only manufacturers, it's going to send a message to consumers and where the state of car buying and car manufacturing is going.
You're still going to have a problem in the United States. You may not have a problem in China. You may not have a problem in India. You may not have a problem in Europe. You're going to have a problem in the United States because we use our cars for moderate distance travel.
Mm-hmm.
And electric cars don't work like that. You want to drive the thing like 50 or 100 miles a day, you're good. If you want to go over that, now you have a problem. Now you have to charge the thing somewhere. And yes, they've got them up over to, 200 miles a day in some cases. But it's still a concern. Unless we get the infrastructure in place to make train travel or bus travel or air travel, God help us, more efficient, more effective, we're going to need cars that can drive 300 miles a day, 400 miles a day, 500 miles a day, single shot. No recharging. And the electric cars just don't seem to be getting there. So you've either got to figure out a way to charge the things in 20 minutes so I can get another 200 miles on it while I eat lunch, or you got to keep the combustion engine around. Because you're not going to force every American to get on a bus to go from Boston to New York City. No, we're not going to do it.
Well, before you know it, we might have the Hyperloop, so that might work.
I welcome the Hyperloop.
Now, is there any possible way that you can have an electrical car but still have the carbon engine? Or is that completely...
Oh, it's been done. Yeah, the combination electric gas hybrid exists.
That would reduce, at some levels...
Yeah, I mean, the Prius does that. I mean, the Prius has an electric motor and a gas motor.
But also with these things, it does cost and have a hefty price tag.
Yeah, but the...
Not only in the manufacturing level, but on the consumer end.
But mass production will bring the cost down. The question is one of practicality. And the idea that you would just flat out ban private owner, ban the sale of new internal combustion engines in the United States...
No, of course there's going to be a huge backlash of that.
I don't see it happening because at the very least, you're still going to have California and you're still going to have Texas,
mm-hmm.
which are massive states where people spend all day in their freaking car, have a ton of electoral votes, ton of representation in Washington, D.C., and are going to be like, screw you. You will pry my internal combustion engine out of my cold, dead hand.
That's what America's based on. Like America and your pickup truck and, the Dodge Ram climbing over.
I got a shotgun in one hand and a V8 engine in the other. I am an American.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, today in sports, we learn more deadly facts regarding CTE. Research on 202 former football players found evidence of brain disease linked to repeated head blows in nearly all of them, from athletes in the National Football League, college, and even high school. It is the largest update on the chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, a debilitating brain disease that can cause a range of symptoms, including memory loss. The report doesn't confirm that the condition is common in all football players. It reflects high occurrence of samples in a Boston brain bank that studies CTE. Many donors and their families were contributed because of players' repeated concussions and troubling symptoms before they died. Quote, there are many questions that remain unanswered, said lead author Dr. Ann McKee, a Boston University neuroscientist. It is also uncertain if some of the players' lifestyle habits, including drugs, alcohol, steroids, diet, might be a contributing factor. CTE was diagnosed in 177 former players, nearly 90% of brain studied. That included 110 of the 111 brains from former NFL players, 48 of 53 college players, 9 out of 14 semi-professional players, 7 out of 8 Canadian football players, and 3 out of 14 high school players.
Okay, so here's the number that really matters in all of this.
110... Out of 111.
Out of 111 former NFL players. And this is not a representative sample. That's the first thing to understand in this is because I've met the people who are involved in this study. whenever an NFL player dies young, dies under suspicious circumstances, or dies having had a history of Parkinson's-like symptoms or concussion-like symptoms, mood changes, any of that sort of thing, they try and get the brains. And they are very aggressive about trying to get the brains. What they're not doing is every single NFL player who dies mm-hmm. trying to get the brains.
And that's a question that we have to ask in new research that needs to be done.
So we're
looking at all of them.
So we're looking at some skewed numbers here. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, only 3 out of 14 high school football players showed signs of CTE.
But in turn, we're saying that even at the high school level, where you stop...
At the high school level, you're going to get a more representative sample. Because we're talking about kids who... Let's depress everybody. Kids who commit suicide. Kids who are shot to death. Kids who are in car accidents. Kids who overdose on drugs. You're getting a broader spectrum. Mm-hmm. And none of these kids are likely to be showing signs of CTE at the age of 18. It's something that sets in later in life. The fact that the numbers, the percentage gets higher and higher and higher as we go from high school football to college football to the NFL says that there is a serious problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had a representative sample, if we could get the brain of every former NFL player and examine it, we may find out that 99% number still holds. In which case, the league and the players have to ask some pretty profound questions. You are never going to fix this. This is the price that you pay mm-hmm. to be a professional football player. And there are going to be people who are willing to pay that price. There are going to be people who are like, I can make $200 million by the time I am 35 years old. And if I die when I'm 60, I don't care.
So be it.
Because I want that.
Mm-hmm.
People still race automobiles. One of the most dangerous things in the world that you can do. Why? Because I can make money doing it. And I can have fans, and I can have a great life, and I want to do that.
The question becomes now, though, when you're hearing these staggering facts of parents having their children. And again, when we discuss this, we're not just talking about football. There obviously has been a much more heavier focus on football because these are the numbers that we're getting from it, but we're talking about hockey, boxing, soccer, anything that you can use your head, because that's the thing with CTE. It does not matter what you are being hit with, it's that you're being hit.
Yeah.
And when we are seeing numbers that, yes, kids or people that are dying in their early 20s and their brains are showing symptoms of CTE or small evidence of that, that even at the high school level, where you are essentially tried to be taught not to use your head to tackle, but sometimes kids aren't taught the right way or paying attention.
But it's not even the tackling. It's going down to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's incidental contact. There are a lot of ways that you can get your brain banging around inside of your skull. So it's not heads-up football and cutting down on head-to-head hits that cause concussions is a step in the right direction, but it doesn't fix the problem entirely. And nobody's going to watch them go play flag football out there
mm-hmm.
because that's not what we signed up for. We see it more in the NFL because the NFL is about hitting. That's what the game is. It's giant bodies crashing into each other as they try and move a piece of leather from one end of a strip of grass to another. That's football. Hockey has far more brutal hits than football
all
does.
Over the body
mm-hmm. all over the place, but we don't see it in the same way because that's not the point of the game. Soccer is a huge issue, and there are a lot of questions about when young people should be allowed to use their heads in the game of soccer, and they keep pushing that limit higher and higher and higher because they're finding evidence now that when kids are younger, heading the ball is causing concussions mm-hmm. and putting them at risk for CTE. We're not going to get rid of sports.
But
we're not going to get rid of the NFL.
No, of course
not. But the NFL...
That's the question. And it's...
This report is about the worst thing that could have happened training camp week for the NFL.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing. For, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, the NFL has been able to hide a lot of this and brush it under the rug. These more and more studies have been coming out year after year. I'm going to say within the past decade. But we've known about CTE since 1928 when it was first discovered. If anybody remembers back to Rocky V in the first scene, that CTE and in the start of development of it. This is stuff that we've known for so long, and especially here in Boston at Boston University, they have been on the forefront of this. If anybody's seen the movie Concussion, perfect example of how this really started momentum. But the NFL for so long was able to brush it. This is evidence that you cannot deny. These are studies that you cannot deny. And what you're going to have across the country, just like you said, you are not going to get rid of the NFL. Football is not going to go away. Soccer is not going to go away. But the more that we know about it, the more that, and there are studies that we need to figure out, are there certain parts of the head? Are there certain parts of the brain that are affected more?
No,
but that's actual. I mean, there are neuroscientists are saying that the more we study, the more we can understand which part of the brain that affects it.
It's not going to make football any safer.
Oh, of course not. Absolutely. And
here's a problem that you got. Training camp week. Andrew Hawkins retired yesterday. He signed a one-year deal with the Patriots. Wasn't feeling it in training camp. Walked away. But he's also donated his brain for research. David Bruton left the Denver Broncos today and cited the desire to avoid CTE as his reason for stepping away from football. There have been a couple of other guys who've walked away from the game. This is not just going to continue to happen at the top level. This is going to start to happen at a much lower level,
mm-hmm.
where you're going to have kids in elementary school saying, I don't want to play because I don't want to get that. You're going to have,
I don't think you're necessarily going to have kids. You're going to have parents that are not allowing their children to do it.
Kids in high school get their bell rung a couple times. You're going to be like, that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing this anymore. I don't want to be walking around with Parkinson's when I'm 45.
Mm-hmm. No, and in reading some of the articles and doing more research on it, it's interesting to see different families from across the country and discussing their children being in Pop Warner and whatnot. And some of them had discussed, well, I'll wait till high school so they can play football. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you're starting them at a young age, you're probably going to be less affected by it than when you're starting at football. But that's the thing. And when you're talking about towns in Texas that are banning tackle football and going to flag football, you have a problem.
Yeah.
The
fact that it's happening in Texas. The fact that it's happening in Texas
shuts down on a Friday night for football games
tells you how serious this story is being taken. And this is going to be a big, big challenge for the NFL. I think you go back to the leather helmets. I think you go back to the leather helmets. Because if you...
But then, Derek, you can't hear them smashing into each other.
Because if you don't have that feeling that my head is protected, you protect your head.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe maybe slowing the game down a bit and getting back to fundamentals of possession and tackling could be the one way that the NFL gets out of this.
But unfortunately, it will never happen because fans want bigger, better. They want faster. This is why you see in so many different sports...
Fans want football.
No, of course they
fans
do, but they
football.
Want people hit it, just like hockey. Hockey fans want beautiful hockey, but they also want fights. They want people smashing into each other, just like in football. You may be a different breed, but I'm going to say a majority of football fans wants those exciting games. They want the finesse of a quarterback throwing a perfect pass to somebody in the end zone, but they also want people smashing into each other. How many times have you watched it with a group of buddies and the audible groan of when somebody gets completely demolished and almost cut in half by a tackle?
But here's where you're at right now. 6 years from now, the college game is going to change because these kids that are playing flag in high school are going to come to the college level, and they're not going to know how to hit, and they're not going to want to hit.
Yeah, but if we're talking about in the next decade, you're going to have enough of a supply.
4 years after that, those kids are going into the NFL, and the same thing is going to happen. So one way or another, the nature of how football is played in this country is going to change. And the NFL can either get out in front of that right now, which they've been trying to do for years, you know, they've cut back on helmet-to-helmet contact. They're ejecting people from games for doing it. We don't have the jacked-up segment on ESPN Sports Center anymore. We still love a great tackle. We still love seeing people collide and bits of things go flying all over the place. And people falling down on the ground and laying there and is he going to get up? And then he gets up and everybody cheers. Yes, that's part of the excitement of the game. But football was incredibly popular in the United States back when guys weren't flying at each other full speed. They were just punching each other in the mouth down in the trench. Football came of age in the 60s and 70s before we had all this high-speed collision and all of this gear that is supposed to protect people from concussions, mm-hmm. but apparently didn't. And the other thing that we didn't see is a lot of these guys that played in the 60s don't seem to have CTE. Maybe they do, and they just don't have the brains. But that's the data that we have right now. So one way or another,
it's frightening.
One way or another, the game changes. WMFO Medford.
In food news, we learn water isn't the only unsafe thing to drink in Mexico. The U.S. Department of State is alerting travelers to Mexico about possible tainted or counterfeit alcohol that could cause sickness and blacking out. The department on Wednesday updated its information page specific to Mexico, cautioning vacationers who choose to drink alcohol to, quote, do so in moderation or to stop and seek medical attention if you begin to feel ill, end quote. The warning noted that the safety and security of U.S. citizens overseas is one of the highest priorities. The updated warning comes in the wake of a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation surrounding a Wisconsin woman's death that raised questions about drinks being served in an all-inclusive resort. Following the initial report, the Journal has received accounts from more than three dozen people reporting similar experiences after drinking limited amounts of alcohol at resorts in Mexico. The State Department also said that U.S. citizens should contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate in Mexico. Is this legit or is this alcohol poisoning? Yeah,
used to be don't drink the water. Now it's don't drink the water, don't drink the alcohol. How about don't go to Mexico? Is that an option? Just don't go
I'll
to Mexico.
I'll have you say, I'll tell you, one night after many, many drinks in Mexico, I thought it was a smart idea to get 25-cent street tacos, when in fact, it was not a good idea to get said 25-cent street tacos.
No, that's like the gas station sushi. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
I also got Papa John's from a bicycle pizza delivery. Many, many questionable behaviors in Mexico, but is this legit though? I don't have any facts yet for it to say. I can understand there is an investigative piece put out by this Wisconsin newspaper. Somebody did feel ill, but is it also some sort of, there are a lot of pesticides, there are a lot of bad things living in the water or some sort of alcohol. So when you talk about alcohol, are you drinking it straight or are you drinking it with ice? Because you should know if you drink something, more than likely they're using tap water ice. So you can say you're not drinking any of the Mexican water when in fact you are.
I think what it comes down to, and I read the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal